Of course, we are all looking forward to be in Marrakesh in October, not only to enjoy the hospitality of Morocco, but also I think this is going to be one of the most interesting annual meetings happening in a country that is at the crossroad of civilization, a country that has done many, many good reforms.
The IMF and its sister institution, the World Bank, work with 190 countries around the globe with all their own unique set of circumstances and challenges. And while the objective is simple, to improve lives, getting there is more complicated and requires a lot of local context. So every third year, the IMF World Bank annual meetings are held in a place that helps these institutions better understand the cultural nuances of its membership and provides a platform for policymakers in the region who sometimes feel they're not being heard.
We are in the global economy. So hopefully in Marrakesh, we can raise the voice of the global south because we want to be part of the global conversation. I think there is...
In today's program, a conversation between Morocco's Minister of Finance, Nadia Feta, and Jihad Azur, director of the IMF's Middle East and Central Asia Department, ahead of this year's annual meetings to be held in Marrakesh. Their conversation took place as part of the Governor Talk series hosted by the IMF during the spring meetings last month.
Ahlan wa sahlan, bonjour. Thank you very much for accepting our invitation, Madame le Ministre. A few days ago, Morocco got a new precautionary line, Flexibility Credit Line, FCL. This is something that we have been working for years to get there. Several previous precautionary lines were implemented. Those lines in the past helped Morocco weather several shocks and gave you a good framework to accelerate some of those reforms. You are the first country in the Middle East, North Africa, Central Asia, Caucasus, and also in other parts of the world who were able to get this type of facility that recognizes the effort that you have made. Let me ask you why you asked for this facility while you are doing well. You have very good access to the markets. What motivated you?
First, I would like to thank you for the invitation and the opportunity maybe to showcase of what's happening in Morocco. I recall a conversation we had I think last year in spring meetings, we were pushing to negotiate for this precautionary line. And some of the staff told me, we're busy with managing the crisis. And I said, it is our way of managing the crisis. Because we had several ones. And Morocco, thanks to the partnership, thanks to the strong reforms that have been undertaken for two decades, was able to, I would say, have this crisis quite well managed and the economy resilient. But really the objective was not to stop the very strong agenda reform that we were having. So I think when you are facing increase of crisis, several drought pandemic crises, there might be some temptation to say, let's postpone reforms, which we can definitely not afford to do. And it's definitely the commitment of the government to keep this dynamic of the reform. So the solution was to have an insurance first. So we're really very happy to have it really as an insurance to keep on this, I would say, path of transformation with some kind of serenity. And the other thing is to keep the discipline of, I would say, going back to macroeconomic fundamentals. It is also important. So I think the relationship with the IMF and the strong cooperation have been successful. This is why we wanted to go on upper level, probably more demanding, ask for much more, I would say, discipline in the public policy and for the public policy makers. But we think we're ready and we think that you will keep an eye definitely on how much we are, I would say, in the track of, especially for this three-year plan of stabilization plan.
Thank you very much. My second question is, we have over the last 3 years, all of us had to deal with successive shocks. And COVID was one of those that had, I would say, specific meanings because lives were at stake, livelihoods too. You had to manage this, and then after that, you had to manage the droughts, given the importance of the agriculture sector in Morocco, and the spillover from the war in Ukraine. Tell us a bit, what is the recipe for resilience?
The recipe was first confidence. Confidence that we had a vision, we had his the majesty's leadership, and we had, I would say, some serenity in the dialogue with all the stakeholders and the population. It was really important because, as you mentioned, in COVID time, we were so lucky to have vaccines at very early stage, that we could have direct money transfers to the most vulnerable families. We were amazed how we could do it easily thanks to digital. And when I'm not talking just about those people who organized the transfer, but people who were sitting in rural areas and having the trust that they will get the money because the government had promised to have the money. So I think really this this serenity, this social dialogue was a key, I would say, success factor in managing this crisis. The second one is that we have a diversified economy, which has allowed actually to have a very strong rebound in 2021, almost 8%, and to prepare, unfortunately, for this severe drought that we have in 2022. So 2022, unfortunately, we couldn't meet the objective of 3% growth. We were more than 1.5. But at least this diversified economy, automotive, fertilizers, phosphate, even textile, tourism, has allowed for additional revenue for hard currency to balance this doubling of the energy bill and the other spillovers that we had from this different crisis. We had to manage carefully the fiscal tool to have targeted measure. Also, we have been quite disciplined in the explaining that we won't be back to subsidize any oil at the gas station, but keep subsidizing what is necessary, cooking gas, wheat, sugar, and maybe transport for people and goods. So I think it was important to keep these measures because the other challenge is to keep putting the fundamentals for growing economy, for industries, etc. I think it's a mix of all this. Of course, we were supported also with our partners. We could keep, even if we have, I would say, more severe condition in the financial markets, I think that this narrative story, strong reform agenda and disciplined fiscal policy have allowed us also to access to markets 2 months ago at quite, I would say, satisfactory conditions.
It was interesting during COVID because I think it was one of the few countries where the private sector came in also to support the government in providing the necessary support for people and for livelihood. What keeps you awake at night these days? What are the issues that for you in the next year or two are the most challenging for you as Minister of Finance?
I hope that the global economy will recover, and I cannot think about another worst case scenario than these 3 years of different crises. But definitely, water management is one of our priorities, very important for us. I think we're taking the proper measures for this, but we definitely, to be prepared, we still need some rain. Important water management is very important because it's vital resource, but we are changing our mindset. We are not anymore, we don't want anymore to manage drought 3 years. We want to manage climate change in general and water scarcity as, I would say, the base case, and really change our strategy and philosophy around this. The second thing is that to keep this trust of the private sector, the trust of the union, the trust of the population, because we need the private sector to invest, to create jobs. We need the population to wait for this social protection, for this social state to be built. Maybe we will be back to this reform. This is important. What makes us also, I would say, maybe a bit uncomfortable is what we've seen worldwide as a fragmentation and the temptation also of protectionism, because I think that some countries will export their own internal problems, and we cannot afford anymore maybe to have this type of discussion of protectionism in the neighborhoods, I would say, of our country.
Thank you very much. You mentioned reforms. You and your colleagues have decided to maintain the reform drive while you were also working on stabilizing the economy. What could you tell us more on those reforms, especially those who are important for your citizen, for social inclusion, and how you see those reforms going forward?
I think we're blessed, under the guidance of His Majesty, to have a new development model with a timeline that goes up until 2035. We're blessed because the Commission, who was in charge of the consultation, were very high experienced people, but coming from different worlds, economic world, the Moroccan diaspora, people from the academic world, civil society. And they took their time, more than 2 years, to consult the population and ask them what is important. And guess what? Education, health, social protection. Even in the party to which I represent, during all the 5 years before the election, we got and consulted the people and same priorities. And with COVID crisis, for those who are still skeptical of what was important, definitely social state was the most important thing. And this is what we promised as a government, that it would be priority one and two and three to build this social state, because the demographic dividend is very important. Youth needs us to, I would say, build a better future for them. So what we are doing for social protection, we start in with health insurance. Mm-hmm. And maybe one or two figures to see how this is transformational for our country. We have a social security agency that's been there for 60 years or so. And during the 60 years, we had less than 8 million people benefiting from the social security. Within 1 year, in 2022, we could register almost 15 million additional people. It is very important. Why are they coming for the social security? First, because we've created the proper platform, the proper, I would say, schemes for everyone and plans, because not everyone had the same revenue. So we didn't have the schemes taking into account the reality of how much they have as a revenue end of the month. But also because they don't see it only as a tax burden, but they see that there is a real incentive to come and identify in this agency, because they can go to hospital and get, I would say, the proper healthcare that they deserve. So it is really an important moment, because there is a trust that something will be happening. We also are putting third of our budget in education and health. Education is a key subject. Public school is the only chance for the majority of youth in our countries. Maybe one or two figures. One figure is, unfortunately, we have 300,000 young people that are quitting high school or schools without no skills. And our objective, pragmatic one, is within 3 years to decrease this number by one third, actually. So education is a very important thing. During COVID crisis, for the first time, we saw almost 50,000 children coming back from private schooling to public schooling because their family couldn't afford it. We would like in the future the families to come by choice to the public school, because it's very important. This is really major reform that we are busy with. But on the other hand, we are putting also a comprehensive strategy to boost the economy, Today, the public sector represents 2/3 of the investment, and we want to move forward to have the private sector representing by 2035 the 2/3 of the investment. So a full set of measures to create the proper environment to, to bring, I would say, investors, and to have the government or the public sector being much more as a regulator, facilitator, and ease the life of any investor to create job. This goes, of course, with reform in the way that we are doing in the public sector, to have a more regional approach, to decentralize, because decisions are still making in the capital in Rabat, but I'm sure in many other countries it's the same thing. It's happening in the capital. We need the decision to be much more local. And thanks to a strong digital strategy, it's going to definitely help to do this.
Thank you very much. It's fascinating. Let me ask you a short follow-up question. One of the issues we face when we do reforms in the region is participation and voice. And this is sometimes, even if reforms are good, but ownership is weak, we end up not having those reforms fulfilling the aspirations of people. You were mentioning that you had this commission and you had included several stakeholders. How you assess this experience of inclusion in designing reforms?
I think it's a key success factor in the reform. It's very important to listen to citizens, because when you say people don't understand the reforms, they definitely understand the reforms. When they're paying a cheap bill of energy, when they open the television and see that in other countries the prices have quadrupled or doubled or whatever, so they understand. Of course, when you are in the opposition on the civil society, by construction, you don't agree. But I think talking in full responsibility and with full transparency, saying that we need to do this reform and we share the information, we share the timeline, and you need to show short-term results, because even if people trust you, they won't be waiting for 5 years or say, you'll see within 10 years, everything will be set, it will be okay. No, you are not given any trust for 10 years. You need short-term measures. And this is what we are trying to do, to show that it is happening. And keep explaining. The other thing is that we also are promising that we can consider to readjust the policies also, because we need a permanent conversation with the stakeholders. And this was one of the, I would say, most important to my advices of this new model development, is that the governments or the policymakers take 5 years to assess, 5 years to make a strategy, and say that we take 15 years to implement. We need to be flexible, agile. We are living in a very turbulent world, a lot of headwinds, and no one has the recipe that works forever. And I think we are in this mindset to be listened. The other thing is that 2 months after the Ukraine war and crisis, in a brave way, we had this social dialogue starting, because it was not the easiest moment to do it. But we said, we told them, we are now entering in a very difficult time, and we need to solve it together, because and the union have been very constructive in this discussion.
In the beginning of our talk, you raised a concern that we all have, which is fragmentation. And we're going to Marrakesh to fight fragmentation. Morocco is a country that can clearly claim being a crossroad of civilization, both culturally, historically, and also geographically. And also, if I want to add an additional dimension, in the forward-looking design of the future of the economy, you have also anchored your economy into the global value chain, into certain sectors that are sectors of the future. Are you worried, and specifically how you see those tensions affecting an economic model like the Morocco's model, and what would be your issues that you would like to share with us?
As you were mentioning, we are a land of tolerance. We are at the crossroad of different civilization. We are also a gateway to Africa, but also to Europe. And Morocco have, at very early stage, agreed on several free trade agreements with many countries, and it's not definitely a balanced trade relationship. However, we strongly believe that this openness of our economy has helped the competitiveness of Morocco, because today when we build this Tangier Med port, no one would have believed that it will become the first containers port in the Mediterranean. On the paper, it didn't work, but it works actually, and it helps the Moroccan economy. It helps also the automotive industry for some European country, and hopefully it will benefit also to Africa. So I think what could be scary is this double standard when it comes to trade, international transparent rule, because sometimes we feel it definitely unfair. And one of the barriers that we see is this regulation that is more and more complex, that we have difficulty to follow up. So regulation regarding decarbonization, okay, is something we believe in because climate change is there. But without being polemic, interesting how gas, you couldn't speak about gas in 2021. We cannot. No one was funding for any transition through gas. Guess what? End of 2022, you can discuss about gas, nuclear, whatever. Everything is okay to do the energy transition. So we are not naive. We are not pushing. We cannot be doing the regulation. But I think this double standard, I would say, relationship in trade, in regulation, is something that is not acceptable. We need to be in the global. We are in the global economy. We have talent, and there is a shortage of talent, of youth, of innovation. We have a lot of innovation, and we just want a world that is no more to dominate, but to share. So I think that Morocco is definitely not asking for aid. We are asking for trade. Fair trade, I think. I'm not naive. I know it's not fair. There is geopolitical tensions. There is, the interest, and every country, every policy country have to preserve the internal interest, but no one can do it alone. So hopefully in Marrakesh we can raise the voice of the global south, because we want to be part of the global conversation. I think there is probably a lot of adjustments on the governance side to better organize the voice of Africa, the voice of the emerging and middle-income countries. And this is maybe something we can put in the agenda of the annual assembly in Marrakech in October.
Thank you very much. Our time, unfortunately, is running fast, but I cannot end this very interesting talk without asking you, what you would like to see at the end of the annual meetings in Marrakech?
I would love to have a Marrakech declaration that reflects that the challenges, the priorities of this part of the world have been heard, that are high in the agenda of course, the international community, and that this new financial architecture has come with proper solution. I'm not talking about money, just solutions for what we are busy with. Poverty in many countries are still a reality, unfortunately, much more after this successive crisis. But climate change is also high in our agenda, digital transformation, and we need other solution, more solutions for the continent. So that would be the objective, and maybe also to have a sustainable pledge that the Global South will be part in the future of all global conversations that are happening about the big topics. And the other third one is, you were talking about this fragmentation, is that we come with the promises that the nation will be much more open to restart, I would say, multilateralism rather than closing the borders, the markets, and the frontiers.
Madame la Ministre, thank you very much for being with us this afternoon. We look forward to be with you in Marrakesh in 6 months,
looking
inshallah.
Looking forward to seeing you in Marrakesh.
That was Morocco's finance minister, Nadia Fetah, and Jihad Azur, head of the IMF's Middle East and Central Asia Department. Their conversation took place as part of the Governor Talks series during the IMF World Bank spring meetings last month. Look for other IMF podcasts wherever you get your podcasts, and you can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.